We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
From Pod World Headquarters, this is the Carolina Insider from Learfield IMG College.
We're back. Time for another edition of the Carolina Insider. Jones and Adam here with you. Adam, there's not much going on around the world of college athletics.
This is the first time in a while you haven't said that it's Friday.
It's not Friday.
Right. I think you were correct in not saying that.
So, okay, there's a lot of let's just get a lot of things out on the table right now at the beginning of the show. One, this is not a guarantee that we're going to have two shows a week for the foreseeable future. We just felt like there was enough happening that we needed to be here with you to discuss it. Number two, Adam, to say the situation is fluid would be an understatement. There's a lot going on right now. We waited as long as we could, but we wanted to have some discussions about football and everything that's going on. But we fully understand that what we say may not actually be relevant by the time this comes out.
Well, and we're recording this 5 minutes before whatever time you're listening to it. So if you're listening at 7 a.m., 6:55 a.m., and we're in here eating biscuits. If you're listening at noon, we recorded at 11:55, and we're eating a little IP3 pizza right now.
If it's October the 3rd, we just did this yesterday.
I'm going to finish this and go rake the leaves.
So we're going to talk a little bit about everything that's going on football-wise. We also have a good football guest. Rick Steinbacher has been on the show many, many times. Associate AD here at Carolina. Rick's had a lot on his plate. He's been Carolina's point of contact from the scheduling side of things. And also he is one of the handful of people that is guiding the safety protocols for Carolina football and how they're trying to get everything done in the safest way possible. So, obviously, Rick has a lot going on. We touch on a bunch of different subjects. Not a super long interview, 20, 25 minutes. But we do hit on a lot of different topics, mostly surrounding those two areas. So, that's coming up in just a little bit. Of course, there's been big baseball news. We'll talk a little bit about that as well. Adam has a list and more. So, Adam, let's start with football. And man, it's just Monday was a wild day, and there were reports in the morning that the Big Ten had decided to cancel its season. Then those reports in the middle of the day were refuted, and so at least as of the time that you and I are talking about this, that's where we stand, that no decision has been made. But it's clear that those discussions are at least happening. And so to say that college football is hanging in the balance a bit, at least this season, I think would be a fair statement.
Well, and the swing started even around midnight or so when Trevor Lawrence sent out the tweet, because you probably went to bed Sunday thinking, oh, things don't look very good. And then when you woke up Monday morning, all of a sudden all this stuff had happened with the players having this video call with each other. And so that was a whole nother swing. And then you had the swing with all the various reports about the Big Ten. There's been a lot of reports.
Yeah.
It kind of reminds me of what was happening during the whole expansion discussion when everybody had a source. It usually contradicted everybody else's source, and things that were thought to be certain were then pure folly an hour later. And that's kind of where we are.
Adam, I think the large majority of players and coaches want to compete. They want to do it safely, and they want to be guaranteed that they can do it safely, which is, of course, understandable. But it seems like a large – and there's going to be some guys who opt out. Carolina has seen that. And there's going to be individual instances of that. And as we've talked about on previous shows, that's understandable. That should be expected, and you have to accept that when it happens. But I do think – again, a large majority of coaches and players want to compete, assuming they can do it safely. But I'm not sure they're the ones who, I mean, they're likely not the ones who are going to make this decision. It's likely going to be university presidents and chancellors with some information from their athletic directors and the medical experts to try to get this figured out. And it's a lot easier to say that, yes, you want these guys to play because we all want them to play, but I also can see the other side of it, of the responsibility that you have if you're, for example, Kevin Gustkowitz at Carolina, for the health and safety of everybody on your campus. That is part of the burden that you bear when you reach that level of leadership. And so there's a lot that goes into this decision. I don't think it's something that is being taken lightly, should be taken lightly. It's just a really complicated, hard decision to make.
And it's difficult to know, because is your job, if you're, say, Kevin Gustkowitz, who knows a million times more about this than we do, is your job to help the students you're in charge of eliminate all the risk, or a reasonable amount of the risk? If your job is to help them eliminate all the risk, I don't think you ever opened campus back up, because that in itself carries a little bit of risk. So if you're willing to tolerate that, are you also willing to tolerate some uncertainty with what exactly will happen with playing football? Maybe so. But if there's one overwhelming thing that's come through crystal clear in all this over the last week or so, it makes me think of, like, college sports is at this birthday party and they've got a pinata.
Mm.
And they put this blindfold on college sports and they just randomly swing their bat trying to hit the pinata. And maybe somebody gets a really good smack in and everybody's like, hey, good job.
Good job, Iowa State.
Yeah. But then, like, somebody else puts the blindfold on and they're terrible. And they just wave the bat around.
Wah, 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 Mississippi.
But there's no set leadership plan of college sports. Or, I mean, I think they're supposed to be, but I'm not sure what they're doing. So, but this is a billion-dollar thing we're talking about, and everybody's just out on their own doing whatever they think feels right to them. I don't think that's how it's supposed to work.
Yeah, I mean, it's been stunning to see. I think that the first break was Power Five, and then everybody – you had Division One and everybody else. Then you had Power Five and everybody else. Now it's really conference by conference, and even – in a conference by conference, I think it's a school by school. I mean, even in the Big Ten, for example, let's go back to Monday morning where the momentum was that the Big Ten wasn't going to compete. But then all of a sudden, Michigan came out and Jim Harbaugh had a big saying, hey, no, we want to. This is why we want to. And so it's almost every school for itself. It's like the Wild West.
I'm not just saying this. I feel like one of the conferences that's come out looking the best is the ACC, just because they don't have every single member spouting off their own personal opinion at any given moment, and you don't have 14 people talking about their ACC sources. I think John Swafford seems to have done a pretty good job of keeping things in-house and trying to move ahead efficiently, because whatever the Big Ten was on Monday, it was not efficient. It's not efficient to have everybody saying, oh, you decided this, and then you yourself have to come out and go, no, we didn't. And then you've got three other people say, well, we kind of did. That's not moving anything forward.
So, again, we understand that what we are saying right now might be totally old news by the time you hear this. But, Adam, it's hard to get your arms around it right now. It is moving quickly and in very – I think your comparison to the expansion time period is a good one, where what you thought may be true at noon was not true anymore at 3, was not true anymore at 6.
And I don't know when we'll know what's actually true. Maybe we know by the time we're hearing this. But it all feels like it's happened very fast in the last few days.
So, from the Carolina perspective, Adam, a couple of pieces of information recently. Tar Heels had 3 defensive backs that elected to opt out: Javon Terry, DJ Ford, and Bryce Watts, who was the transfer from Virginia Tech. And I think, again, as we've talked about, I think that's to be expected. You just have to say, I mean, no, I didn't see anything other than people going, hey, I understand individual decision. And by people, I mean on the fan side of things. I think, as we have discussed many times, the program itself, Mac Brown himself, and you're going to hear a lot more about these type of discussions with Rick here in just a few minutes, but he's been very open and honest with his team. And I do think, Adam, it speaks to the culture of the football program right now at Carolina and the health, the positive health of that culture, in that, A, you haven't seen, you know, crazy statements or allegations or anything flying around, and that the people who did individually make this decision were totally supported. It's understood, and on you go.
Which I think that was created by the culture, and then that also goes back to reinforce the culture. When the other players are able to see that, oh, not only did they talk it, they're actually walking it and they're handling it this way. I think that goes back to what Mac Brown said when he first got hired, about how he wanted to make sure that what he said was going to happen happened. He was talking about renovations to facilities, but it's the same thing with this. And I think it's been a good example of what he said was going to be the case and how things were going to work. That is how they have worked.
Quick reminder that we're brought to you by LS Tractor. If you have outside chores or projects, don't let them force you to miss any Tar Heel game action when the Heels return to the playing field. LS Tractor will help make short work of those chores. Your normal yard maintenance and larger projects as well. LS Tractor, what's it about for you? Their website, lstractorusa.com. Adam, any other football-y thoughts before we get to the Rick conversation? And then we'll talk the transition for Carolina baseball after that Rick interview and some other stuff as well. But anything else from the football side of things?
That's it.
Tar Heels, of course, were ranked in the top 20 in the coaches' poll. Because, Adam, right when the Tar Heels were starting to feel like they were getting their momentum is when all this had to happen.
Yeah.
Not what I'm talking about.
This is like the magnified 100 times of the old philosophy that whoever Carolina schedules in non-conference will turn out to be good.
Right.
This is that times 100. Whenever Carolina really get things together, that's when the world pandemic's coming.
Oh, yeah, and the Tar Heels did fill their TBA non-conference opponent, which is going to be Charlotte. You'll hear Rick talk about that. In fact, let's just get to this Rick conversation, because he's going to bolster some of the things that Adam and I are talking about. He's going to give you some more real, tangible examples of some of the stuff that we're talking about. He'll also discuss the scheduling challenges and how the ACC has navigated through those, and how Carolina figured out how it was going to add Charlotte to the schedule. So let's get to all of that, the conversation with Rick. Come back. Of course, a lot more to do here on the Carolina Insider.
Of all the people whose lives are changing on a minute-by-minute basis over these last few weeks, I bet our guest today is near the top of that list. Rick Steinbacher, who, of course, played at Carolina, made a very good appearance on the ACC Network recently.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, yes, you did. On the feature of
Oh, yes.
Players who played.
Oh, you mean on ours, the show that was named after this show. Yes, I
didn't want to say
that.
It that way, but it was the highest rated show in ACC Network history. But that he didn't just retire after that appeared, and he's continued on with his role with Carolina Athletics. So, Rick, thank you for taking a couple minutes out of what I imagine must be a very busy time for you.
This is my first time on the pod since you've got the new Pod World headquarters.
Yeah. Oh,
wow.
Yeah.
You guys have upgraded nicely.
I know. We're moving on up over here, Rick. Okay, Rick, what is a daily – what's a day like for you right now? What kind of things are you thinking and managing right now on a day-to-day basis?
You know, Jones, great question. I think the time frame of things has changed radically. We used to schedule non-conference games 5 and 10 years out. Now we're scheduling them 5 weeks out. So the whole amount of time that things take to happen has just gotten blown up and reconstructed. So much more communication. I mean, I say all the time, I think we are so much better at communicating and working together collaboratively, whether that's within the athletics department or across the ACC, than we've ever been before. I want this virus to get out of here, because once it does, I think we're all going to be a lot better at what we do, because a lot of new skills that we've learned, I think we're going to appreciate things so much more. Mm-hmm. I mean, man, do I miss game day. I can't wait for it to be back. So just managing a lot of new challenges. I call it tackling new challenges and learning new lessons every day.
So you – and I want to talk about the schedule stuff, but you also are one of the people spearheading kind of the safety aspect of things with the football program, how to do things as safely as possible. Just take us through what has gone into those decisions, what is guiding you and the group of folks that are trying to make those type of calls.
Yeah, I never thought I'd see my coach, Mac Brown, walking around with a 6-foot stick, making sure people are standing far enough apart from each other at practice. It's been radically different. But we've been just so fortunate to have just some great people on our campus that are brilliant, whether it's Dr. Cohen or Dr. Weber, some of the infectious disease doctors up at UNC Healthcare, Dr. Mary Asioka, who's just been an absolute rock star in leading the athletics department's response and safety measures for COVID, to people within our facilities unit, Jackie Field. In fact, Dr. Sioka and Jackie Field won the Williamson Award today, which is kind of the MVP of the year for Carolina Athletics staff members. And those two have just been great leaders in making our facility safe, making them clean, keeping them disinfected. Dr. Sioka, some of the questions he's had to answer, I joked with him the other day. I said, Mario, in what course in med school did they talk about whether or not you can do certain football drills during a pandemic? Really, what class got you ready to answer all the questions you have to answer? But they've done a great job.
Football and sports, really, is so built on structure. There's this many days until this happens, and we're going to accomplish this today and this tomorrow, and then we'll be ready for that. When you're not really sure exactly what is going on, how do you manage a team of college students who would like to have some idea of what's going on?
The harder part is the coaches. Football coaches like to know what's going to happen 3 years from now, let alone 3 days from now. But Coach Brown's done a great job just kind of changing his paradigms, because he's used to structure, he's used to organization, he's used to having all the answers, and he's used to expecting everyone that he interacts with to have the answers for their particular area. So we've had to work through those things, and it's been radically different for us, it's been different for the coaches, and it's been so different for the players. I mean, they hear one thing one day, and then the next day they may hear something totally different. But through it all, kind of like I said before, where I feel like we as a staff have gotten much better at communicating and collaborating, I think our players have just really risen to the challenge. They've learned to deal with the unknown. They've learned to focus on what they can control and tune out what they can't control. You know, we've had 4 practices, and man, do we look good. The guys are working hard. They're doing everything they're being asked to do. They're wearing a mask. They're staying apart from each other when they're not in doing a play. They've just had to learn to do so many new things that they've never done before, and learn them and do them so much quicker.
What have you noticed about Coach Brown during these last several weeks and months? I mean, you know him very well. You knew him from his earlier time at Carolina. I'd just be interested in what you've seen from him, how he's adjusted, how he's tried to stay flexible during this time period. Just how have you seen his leadership style maybe change, or how he's rolled with these punches?
the greatest strengths of Coach Brown, and this is back all the way back to 1989 and still today, is communication and developing relationships. Those are the two things he has needed more than anything during this COVID-19 crisis. And that's what he's relied on, whether it's helping the guys deal with a pandemic, deal with the uncertainty, do new things at practice, or if it's talking to the guys about the social unrest and the racial injustices going on in our world. Coach Brown has just done what he does better than anybody, better than he ever has before. Mm. Build those relationships with those guys and communicate like crazy. I mean, even when the Pac-12 demands from the players came out, and then the Big Ten the next day, the next team meeting, Coach Brown had a PowerPoint listing every single one of those things. And he walked through it with the guys and he said, hey, here's kind of some ways that I see these things. If you want to get things changed, let me know and I'll get them changed for you. But let's work together. Let's stay together. Let's continue to build that relationship and communicate with one another. So it's what he's done great for his whole career. He's doing it now better than he ever has before.
We talked about this recently, and you know much more about this than we do, so I'd be interested in your perspective. In what ways do you think 2020 Mac Brown has maybe the perspective he didn't have, that 1996 Mac Brown didn't have, that has enabled him to navigate all these waters that you just mentioned, what seems to be so well? What skills does he have now that maybe he might not have had then?
The skills that make him who he is are the same, communication relationships. To me, the big difference is he knows what really matters and he knows what doesn't. And that allows him that if it's something that matters, he will, depending on the situation, fight for it, talk about it, educate someone over it, or just make sure that that point gets made, whether it's with Bubba, with me, with a player, with a parent, with a faculty member. He knows what doesn't matter. And if it doesn't matter, he doesn't worry about it at all. So I think that allows him to be really, really focused. And I think the players really respect that because he's coaching them on what they need to be coached on. There's a whole bunch of other things that some other coaches really focus on that he just doesn't worry about. So he knows what matters and he knows what doesn't. And I think that makes him even more effective.
Could you give us an example of something that doesn't matter? Something that maybe that Coach X might be super worried about, but you've seen that Mac Brown is able to realize the level of importance.
Sure. Whether or not you can wear a hat in the building, dress code, whether or not you can wear a shirt from another school in the building. I've seen other coaches go nuts over that. Coach Brown's thing is, look, I don't care if you wear a hat. Now, if you walk up to a guest in the building, I'm going to make sure you know that you should take your hat off, look that guest in the eye, I would say shake their hand, but maybe bump their elbows and exchange with them because you could make an impression on that person that could lead you to get a job someday. And those are the kind of skills that are going to help you be successful in life. But when you're walking around the building, if you want to have a hat on, put a hat on. I don't care. I'm not going to make a rule that you can't wear this or can't wear that. I'll make sure you're first class and you represent yourself and your team the right way. But I'm not going to have a whole bunch of silly rules that just don't matter. Mm-hmm. Things like that.
You mentioned practice and the stick and all. How is Carolina trying to practice right now? How are those practices different than what I'll call a traditional practice during this time of year? What are some of the things that they're having to do differently than in a normal time period?
Well, that's where our medical staff just meeting with our coaches and talking through everything has really, really helped. So everything that the team is doing in practice is informed by the medical experts and all the advice on reducing the chances of transmitting the virus. So what does that mean? It means our guys have shields on their face masks. It means they have performance masks. And even when they're warming up or not practicing or playing full speed, they'll have that mask on up underneath that shield. When it's time to play football, you cannot play football 6 feet apart. So they get together and they run a play. But all the guys on the sidelines are standing 6 feet apart. They've got the sticks in between them to make sure that they are 6 feet apart. And we just learned a lot. And Coach Brown's really restructured practice times, too. He makes sure that no period is longer than 10 minutes. Because, again, to be determined a close contact of someone, you're less than 6 feet apart from them without a mask on for 15 minutes or more. So he's restructured things so that we can play football and do the football things that we need to do in practice, but then mitigate and lower the risk of transmitting the virus any other possible way that we can.
When you said a few minutes ago, man, and we're really looking good, it was almost kind of jarring to remember that, oh, yeah, there's a team that's trying to prepare to play games. How do you make sure that you're managing all these other things that you just talked about while also doing what you're there to do, which is get better?
Yeah, it's not easy. But that's where I think the guys have just been so focused. And they did such a great job. I mean, Brian Hess is our strength coach. He is unbelievable. I mean, he is absolutely awesome. The job he did keeping our guys in shape when they were away from here, doing Zoom workouts and doing individual workouts was remarkable. The guys came back in better shape than they were a year ago, even though they weren't here. And that's a tribute to Brian Hess and his staff. So, you know, I think they're doing all the football things because the guys really, really, really want to play. But they also know that they've got to do things away from the football field and while they're out at practice to help ensure that we have the best chances of being able to play football this year.
Rick, you mentioned the guys really want to play. And there's obviously a lot of discussion going on right now about whether or not football is going to happen or not. I'd just be interested in what you have heard kind of within the player and staff side of things for Carolina and what the overall feeling is there for them.
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously we've had a few players decide not to play, and that's great. I mean, that's Coach Brown, every single team meeting, he says, if you don't want to play this year, that's okay. You still have your scholarship. Come back in January or whenever this thing's over. But if you do want to play, hey, let's go. Same thing with the coaching staff. The vast majority really, really want to play. They love to compete. They love being around each other. We're going to be really, really good. I was joking with Coach Brown the other day. I said, your 93 team looked kind of this way athletically. Your 97 team looked a whole lot differently athletically than your 93 team, i.e. Brian Simmons versus me. wow, that transition has happened so much faster this time because, you know, players play so much earlier in their careers now. Fewer people redshirt, a lot of freshmen come in and make an impact. So you just look at the couple of years of recruiting that Coach Brown's had and the guys that he's brought in, combine that with the development that Coach Hess has done, and it's a team that's looking really, really good right now.
Do you think there is a way, and where I want to don't even want to talk about the campus side of it or anything, or just the play in the games? Do you feel like the safety measures that are being in place at places like Carolina or other ACC schools, do you think those are where they need to be to allow teams to play?
You know, this is my personal opinion, yeah. Jones, but yes, absolutely. You know, I've heard our infectious disease doctors say multiple times, and it's true. And it's not only true about coronavirus, it's true about a lot of things in life. You can mitigate and minimize risk. You can never eliminate it. But there's a lot of really smart things that you can do to lower the risk of catching the virus and just improve your chances of having good outcomes if you do some really, really simple things well. I mean, how hard is it to wear a mask? How hard is it to stay 6 feet apart when you're not playing football? How hard is it to constantly wash and disinfect your hands? It's not that hard. It's just doing the fundamentals. And if you do that over and over again and everybody's doing it, you're going to minimize and mitigate risk as much as you can. Never going to eliminate 100%, but you can do things safely.
Let me ask you one more about this, and Adam may have another one. I don't know. Carolina had the large number of positive tests a couple of weeks ago. What did Carolina football, what did Carolina athletics learn from that can help it moving forward?
I think we learned the fundamentals are the fundamentals. I mean, I think our folks did a good job with masks and distancing before that. Since then, they've done a fantastic job. So that was number one. Number two is college students will be college students. You know, we believe, based on what we've learned, that most of the cases, we know the cases started away from campus when folks were either at a restaurant or off campus. And we know that most of the spread did not happen because of anything in our facilities. Football didn't cause the challenges that we had. It was college kids being college kids. It was a wake-up call for them, and they've been doing everything perfectly since then, and things have gone so much smoother. I mean, we had kind of 3 weeks of perfect, and then we had a week of really turbulent turmoil, if that's a phrase. And then since then, I think it was a wake-up call for everybody, and they're just executing the fundamentals even better every single day.
You mentioned the schedule earlier. So the ACC hands you a schedule that's got a blank where the non-conference game goes.
And get this figured out in a couple days.
We'd like to play this game in a couple months, and it has to be within the borders of your state. What happens next? You just sit down with a chart of everyone who's not playing that day, or what happens?
Well, at first, you know, our non-conference games were Central Florida, outside the state, can't do that. Auburn in Atlanta outside the state. Can't do that. So that eliminated two of them. They were like, oh, we're fine. We got contracts with two schools. We got UConn and JMU. We just got to figure out which one we're going to play. Before they officially announced they were canceling, UConn said, you might want to look at somebody else. We knew that there was a lot up in the air with the FCS schools possibly moving to the spring. So as soon as we realized that UConn and JMU, we might have problems with both of them, we immediately, and I cannot remember who thought of it originally. I think it was somebody on the football staff who suggested it to Coach Brown, who then came to me with it. What about Charlotte? Mike Hills, the AD at Charlotte, a Carolina grad, just an awesome guy. He's one of the people I most admire in college athletics at another university. So as soon as Coach Brown mentioned it to me, I texted him that night. And it took about two or three days to kind of work through things. I mean, his immediate response was, oh, yes, we would love to do this. Let's work on it and see if we can pull it off. And within about 3 days, by then we knew that UConn was going to cancel. By then we talked to JMU. They still weren't sure what was going on with their season, but we agreed to move that schedule or that game out into a later year. And that opened the way for Charlotte. And it took basically one more day to get a contract done, and now we got a game with them.
You mentioned the communication within the league. I have to think from the scheduling side of thing that came into play heavily. Just what were those few weeks like leading up to the ACC eventually going all conference games only plus the one, of course, non-conference, and then eventually getting all those laid out? What was the communication from the league like? What information were they asking from the individual schools?
You know, I said it earlier about us internally at Carolina, communicating and collaborating better. Same thing with the ACC. Michael Strickland, he's the senior associate commissioner for football at the ACC. Gosh, probably 2 months ago, he started having weekly calls of myself and everyone at the other 14 schools, including Notre Dame now, that does scheduling. So we used to talk maybe once or twice a year, maybe meet in person once a year. We started meeting weekly. And it was really helpful. At first, you know, we were still planning on our full 12-game schedule, the original schedule. But even just hearing the other schools, how are they dealing with things? The topic of the meeting may have been scheduling, but boom, right there I could get 14 opinions on, are you making the guys wear masks in the weight room? How are you handling practice? And you got great input right away. But because we had started those weekly meetings a while ago, by the time the schedule changed, it was really easy for us to react and even talk to each other about our non-conference opponents. Because, again, it looked like we had two. We may be able to give one of them to somebody else. And then we went from two to none. So we had to pick up one. So we all just communicated and collaborated and worked together on it.
It seems like your conference, more than ever, your conference mates are like your team right now. It's like the ACC is together and the Big Ten's together and the SEC is together. Is that different than how it normally is? I don't know if I'm asking this question very well, but has it strengthened the relationship between the schools and the athletic departments? Because they're the ones you're riding with right now.
Yeah, you know, the student athletes and the coaches, they love to beat each other. and we love to watch them beat other schools. But when it comes to whether it's marketing or building a building or putting a schedule together, one of the things I love so much about this business, there's a lot of great people in college athletics. So just developing those relationships, having that network of folks, everybody wants to help each other. And I give a lot of the credit for that to Bubba. You know, when Bubba came here, he is so well connected nationally. You go to a convention with Bubba or you go to the College Football Hall of Fame banquet in New York with Bubba, he knows everybody. I mean, even when we were doing the coaching search that ultimately brought Coach Fedora here, we could just say a name and within 5 minutes, Bubba knew somebody who knew exactly what you needed to know about that coaching candidate because of his relationships and because of the network that he had across college athletics. So just watching him operate that way from the time he got here, it's really made an impression on me. And I've really challenged myself to build relationships like Bubba has all across the country. And when you're in a time of crisis and you're dealing with something you've never, ever dealt with before, to be able to pick up or go to a meeting, have 15 opinions shared at once, it's really, really helpful.
I want to ask you about playing the games. This might be a dumb question, but so football is an emotional game, and you played very successfully, as folks do or don't know. We've all been fortunate enough to go to scrimmages at Keenan Stadium where there's 20 people there outside of the players and the coaches, and it feels weird. If we are so fortunate as to play any games, and Jeremiah Gimmel runs in the backfield and makes a big sack and pulls down the quarterback and looks up at the stands and there's 60,000 empty seats there, will Will the players have to be taught how to play at the same level that you play when there's 50,000 people screaming your name?
Yeah, Adam, it's an awesome question. And even as you're asking me the question, I'm trying to think of how would I feel if I was a player. There's nothing like playing in front of a packed house. It's absolutely awesome. But just hearing you ask me that question, I was even thinking back, though, there were times that I enjoyed practice more than the game because it was just you and your teammates, and you were out there competing, and it wasn't in front of a bunch of people. So the first time they do it, it's going to be really weird if they play games, and if they play games without fans there, or even much fewer fans there, which is the reality. It's going to be really weird, in my opinion, for the players the first time. But I think the minute they get to compete, I think they've really missed competing. They've missed playing. I think the minute they get to do it, they're going to love it. They're going to enjoy it. Sure, they'd rather have 50,000 people there than none, or I don't know, whatever the number is, 20,000 or whatever it can be. It'll be different, but I think they'll be anxious to compete.
How worried are you for college athletics in total right now, just with everything that's going on?
Yeah, I'm extremely worried just because of the financial challenges, the mental health challenges. I mean, the student athlete's not getting to compete. You know, I was there when Jenny Levy told the women's lacrosse team, and they were 7-0 at the time, number one in the country, steamrolling towards a national championship. I was there when she told that team the season was over. One of the hardest things I've ever seen in my life. So I worry about the athletes not being able to. I mean, I've got a daughter that's a senior. Her senior year of college is about to start, and it's really, really weighing on her because she loves Carolina. She loves what she does. She loves the thought of being a senior in Chapel Hill, and it's not going to be the way she expected it to be. So I worry about those things. Worry about the financial stuff too. I go back. I mean, it's actually a quote that I love. It's one of my all-time favorite quotes, and it was Chancellor Folt on her first day here at Carolina. And again, at that time, we were in the midst of the NCAA challenges, a whole bunch of other things going on campus. And she said, "I know these are uncertain times. Uncertain times are great opportunities for innovation and growth." So I'm very worried about college athletics because there's a lot of challenges that it has right now. But I do know the places that innovate and grow out of it are going to be stronger for it.
How's Carolina one of those places? How do you do it?
Oh, I think I'm biased. I've been here 21 years. I've never been anywhere else. But Carolina is among the best in college athletics. I think we've got great people, people that want to be here, people that believe in the mission and the traditions of this university, and people that are just passionate about what they do. Success is the only option. And I think when you have people with that mindset, and we do, you're going to find a way to innovate. You're going to find a way to grow. The next year, or heck, even 3 or 4 or 5 years, is going to look radically different than any of us thought it would be. But I think because of innovation, because of growth, and because of the people that we have here, we will change in many ways for the better.
Really good stuff from Rick. And Adam, I thought a really interesting conclusion to that discussion of things are not ideal right now. And the institutions, the athletic departments, the people involved that are going to take this situation and try to figure out a better way are going to be the ones that come out of this on the right side. And I do say this with confidence that you feel good about the leadership. I think Kevin Guskowitz, Bubba Cunningham, Mack Brown, Roy Williams, you know, whoever you consider or want to mention there, I think you feel good about the leadership to help you navigate these, what are currently and what will continue to be choppy waters here for the foreseeable future.
And it was nice intermittently in that interview to have just a couple brief seconds to just think about actual football.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It would be cool to see the Tar Heels throw touchdowns and get big tackles.
Not only would I just like to see any game, I would especially like to see games in which the Tar Heels are really good.
Yeah. So we appreciate the time from Rick. All right, Adam, big news on the Carolina side of things comes from baseball. Mike Fox, after 22 years, announces his retirement as the head coach of the Diamond Heels. Scott Forbes taking over as the new head coach. Coach Forbes has been one of the assistants for Carolina for the last, I believe, 19 seasons, and he's been Carolina's top assistant now for several years. We do have audio of a conversation I had with Coach Fox, and then Adam and I spoke to Coach Forbes. That will be coming up. We are going to have a show, at least that's the plan, later in the week, and so you'll have you'll hear from both those gentlemen then. But we thought, with the football news being so pressing and moving, that we wanted to stick with football for our extra conversation today, and that's why we had Rick with you. But Adam, big news obviously for Carolina baseball. Mike Fox, when he retired, was the winningest active coach in Division I baseball as far as winning percentage in total wins. Changed the expectations, I think, for Carolina baseball. Had a wonderful career. Unfortunately, didn't win a national championship at Carolina. Got very close, but just did wonderful things with the program. And certainly glad to see him going out, not because he had to or he had a health issue or something like that, just because he felt like it was time to go.
I thought it was one of those rare times where you get a real life answer from a sports person about why they're not doing sports anymore, because Coach Fox just said things have kind of slowed down these last 6 months and he realized he didn't mind it that much. Well, a lot of times people talk about whoever coach, when will he retire? Well, it was Dick Bedore who once told us, Jones, you've got to have something to retire to. And if you don't have something you enjoy doing or somewhere you want to go or anything like that, then you're probably not going to retire, because what you're doing, you probably pretty much enjoy. Well, Coach Fox found something he wanted to go do, and that opened the door for Scott Forbes, who, as you said, has been a longtime assistant and has some challenges.
Yeah.
The real world challenges that we all know about, and also the baseball on-field challenges that he'll have to dig into here in the months to come as the Diamond Heels hopefully get ready for a 2021 season. That program's been to two super regionals in the last 7 years. So there's some work to do to get back to – I don't know that it's even reasonable to ask to get back to where they were 10 years ago, because that was absurd.
Yeah.
That was completely absurd.
Four straight College World Series, 5 out of 6 years. I mean, that's
– you can't do that. You can't do that. You couldn't do that then, and I think you can do it even less now, because there's even more good teams now than there were then. But I think Scott Forbes and even Mike Fox would say they would like to maybe take a step ahead of where they've been the last couple years, and we don't know how 2020 was going to end, but we do know that it produced a first-round draft pick. So there's some work to be done.
I do think it's important to note just the impact that Mike Fox had on Carolina baseball. I mean, when he arrived, Carolina had been to one College World Series in the last 20 years. They played in an outdated stadium. And quite honestly, Carolina was kind of a middling ACC program. But they were behind several of the schools that they consider their peers in baseball. And even behind some schools that you might not think were their peers, like Wake Forest was a lot better than Carolina, for example, at that time. So I do think it's worth noting Mike Fox changed Carolina baseball's place, especially with that run that Adam talked about. I mean, 4 years in a row to College World Series, 5 out of 6, 6 out of 8 years. That's an insane run. And Tar Heels had great players, great teams, and that run changed the expectations of that program. And it won't be easy for Scott Forbes, because it wouldn't be easy for anybody to follow Mike Fox, because you're talking about you're following the guy that was the head of all of that. And so I think, and you'll hear some of this when we talk to Scott later in the week, but it'll be interesting to see how he uses what he learned from being next to Mike Fox for 20 years, but also he's not Mike Fox. So how does he take those lessons, but also put his individual spin on it?
I think one thing you said that's a big help for Scott Forbes is the physical facility aspect of it. He's the rare coach who can walk into an important job and say, I think the stadium's pretty good like it is.
Yeah.
You don't need to spend millions of dollars to get that where it needs to be. There's always things that can be brushed up or touched up, but especially in this era, to be able to walk into the office every single day and go, Carolina can win baseball games on a national level in this exact facility right here, that's a big plus.
You know what? You saying that, how big a deal is it for Carolina that all those projects are finished? The Karen Shelton Stadium, the indoor facility for football, even the renovation of the locker room and the downstairs level in the Keenan Football Center. I mean, I think it'd be a hard sell to start some kind of major construction project right now.
You're not starting an indoor football facility right now.
Right.
We should also say a lot of those tabs were paid by the Rams Club.
Yep.
Which we encourage you to join ramsclub.com. Not just scholarships, also facilities. They're doing a little bit of everything right now and could certainly use your help if you have the ability to do so. You should join if you're not a member.
So, again, more baseball talk. You'll hear from both those gentlemen, Mike Fox and Scott Forbes, on a show later in the week, we hope, assuming the schedule stays put, because as we know, nothing these days changes at the last minute. Adam, one thing that doesn't change, the excellence of your list. Do you have one, sir?
Oh, I've got one.
Here we go.
What's on the top of Adam's list? Brought to you by Top of the Hill, where Tar Heels come to celebrate.
Big list today, and I think
Big Daddy list.
I think we got to start with something that was sent to us many times. There's going to be a Dirty Dancing sequel featuring Jennifer Grey.
You know, Adam, we all have regrets in life. And I regret not putting the Dirty Dancing Roadhouse Challenge on the voting for the potty. Because for some reason, that one seemed to stick with people.
Yeah. Well, it certainly did based on the number of times we got sent the link about the update. No production in sight yet, but we know Jennifer Grey is involved as a producer. And we know everything Jennifer Grey touches turns to gold. So I expect that to be good. I thought we should give a little what up. We know that we love Cam Johnson, and right now Cam Johnson's playing really well.
He's playing great.
Fastest son in franchise history to 103 pointers, Jones.
And they've got some good players.
Yeah.
Thunder Dan Marley, Kevin Johnson. Let's name some sons. Charles Barkley.
Charles Barkley.
All right, you're next.
You took the one I was going to say. Oh, Cedric Ceballos.
Oh, that's a good one. Okay. Let me think here. Phoenix Suns. Joe Johnson.
I don't even know if that's true.
He was a son?
I'm sure he probably was. Paul Westphal.
Devin Booker.
You're going with all these modern guys.
DeAndre Ayton. Now you have to name two.
Yeah, I'm not going to name anyone current. I'm thinking back to the Barkley teams. They had that jersey with the basketball on it. Yeah, I'm out.
We've already named Marley Johnson and Barkley.
Yeah, that's pretty much the whole team. As far as I know, that was a 3-on-3 tournament.
So I'm the winner of Name That Son.
Also, another thing people were unexpectedly invested in was this idea that you're moving to another country.
Yeah, we have gotten a lot of info on that.
A lot of really helpful tips. For example, Dennis Goss says, if you'd like to sample life in Iceland, you can watch the movie Eurovision Song Contest.
It is it's in the queue.
Stockton Butler pointed out that former Tar Heel Morgan Goff now plays pro soccer in Iceland, so you could go to Iceland and still watch Tar Heels. But then many people supported New Zealand.
Yeah.
Including Daniel Bunn, who...
Daniel Bunn was invested in New Zealand.
Well, yes. And so he sent us an email to carolinainsiderpod@gmail.com. And he wrote, as soon as the discussion began, I said out loud, he'd better say New Zealand. Turns out your top two were New Zealand and Iceland.
Yeah.
For the last decade or so, Daniel's had his eyes on New Zealand. And I must say, Daniel writes, that's an excellent choice. Daniel has never been, but the Kiwis that he knows are all great people. In addition to handling this COVID situation pretty well, the country has incredible natural features. Remember that Lord of the Rings was filmed there.
I do remember that.
And they have a pretty great tax and economic policy set up. As an economist, Daniel has to mention that. This is a big bonus. The country also doesn't have any snakes or poisonous spiders.
Whoa, 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 whoa. New Zealand doesn't have any snakes?
That's what Daniel said. Now,
sure, I'm buying that.
Well, hold on. Daniel also says he thinks Iceland also has the benefit of no snakes.
Well, of course Iceland has.
That is true. They do not have snakes.
How can you can't have a snake in Iceland?
But you can in New Zealand?
Yes.
Why?
Think about the topography of the two lands, Adam.
Okay. Daniel says
Walter Davis was a son.
Oh, yeah, boom. That's right. That's a good one.
Just no big deal. Former pod guest.
That's right. He sat right here.
I'm Walter Davis, and I'll see you later, big grits.
Daniel completely.
I have a picture of him right there in his son warm up.
Yeah, that's right. You do. Daniel completely supports having New Zealand as a top relocation option in a worst case scenario. Don't know if any Tar Heels play professionally in New Zealand. We got a lot of good feedback on the ACC Network show. Matt Stark
good.
And Jason Fawcett, among others, said that they watched it.
Oh, well, thank you.
And a couple people said they reactivated their cable just to watch it.
Wow.
That's really going above and beyond.
Yeah, thank you very much. We had a fun time doing it. Hope you got a chance to watch the longer version, too, of the dunk contest with Andrew and Sterling and Garrison Brooks. We had a lot of fun with those guys doing that.
We talked about baseball a little earlier. I think we have to mention the passing of Albert Talley. Just the number one Carolina baseball fan is how most people knew him. We were lucky enough to spend a fair amount of time around him when we were doing on the radio. So we know, more importantly than that, just an incredibly nice Southern gentleman who just happened to love the Diamond Heels. Passed away last week. Tons of former players commenting on the various social media things about how much they enjoyed getting to know Mr. Talley and his family. And you could really tell the impression he made on them and how important they were to him and how important he made them feel, which I think was kind of his gift. He can make you feel like you really were important to him. So certainly thinking about him. And I think he would want us to point out Tar Heels in MLB having a pretty good last couple of weeks.
Former pod guest Zach Gallen
is dealing
on fire.
I'm Zach Gallen. See you later, big grits.
Zach Gallen's on fire. Brian Moran has thrown 6 1/3 innings. We've talked before about his long road to the majors. He's struck out 10. He's got a 10-2 strikeout to walk ratio. Brian Moran and Michael Morin got the win on back-to-back days for the Marlins. So that's two former Tar Heels picking up wins for the Marlins, who, as we know, have had some struggles, but they're winning games. So great to see those folks having some success. Jones, would you like to offer your comment on the fact that the Daily Tar Heel is no longer using the phrase student-athlete?
First, Steve Nash was a Phoenix Sun. Amari Stoudemire.
Well, you're Googling.
So what? So what if I just Googled great Phoenix Suns players?
Well, I'm doing a list, so I can't
Tom
Google
Chambers.
Right.
He was on like a Come Fly With Me video or something.
Yeah.
He had that one dunk where he hit the guy and kept going up and dunked it with two hands.
TJ Warren?
Tip your cap to TJ Warren.
I just did.
Jason Kidd. Oh, Shaq played for the Suns. I forgot.
Whoa, I did not remember that at all.
Yeah. Sean Marion. Okay. Thus concludes Suns Corner. Now, before I get to your total question that's just trying to bait me into anger, Adam, I will also say Jake Gilmer sent us an email about New Zealand, and he gave us a bunch of great facts about New Zealand, but I enjoyed this one. Barkeeps are respected and paid well here. Plus, you will serve some of the best locally produced wine and beer in the world. So, gotta tell you, that's a notch for New Zealand there.
I like how he put that in there as though that was probably a career path you'd be pursuing.
Well, I've already said that if I go to Iceland or New Zealand, my goal would be to be the local barkeep. I like how we even put barkeep in there. Yeah. Thank you, Jake.
Yeah, they're respected over there.
Now, Adam, I am going to keep my composure. So the Daily Tar Heel has decided that it's not going to use the phrase student athletes anymore.
That's right.
Adam, I think that is a decision that is certainly within their rights. I think it's a little bit showy, and I think it's a little bit trying to be woke, trying to show how in tune you are with what's going on. And a point that I know that you brought up off the air, which I think is a really good one. Has somebody said they don't want to be called a student athlete? Plus, they are. They are both students and athletes. It's a factual statement. And I mean, if you were saying Sam Howell is a student athlete and he went, whoa, 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 don't call me a student athlete, then I think you'd go, oh, okay. But until something like that happens, if that is kind of the accepted nomenclature that is also factually correct, to me, this isn't you as an institution, the DTH, trying to do something to help the athletes at Carolina. That's not what you're trying to do. You're trying to show, look at us, look at what we're doing. To me, it's a very much self-serving thing to do.
You've solved a problem that I'm not sure it actually exists. If you can show me that it does exist, because if there's one thing I've learned this summer, Jones, it's that I, for example, when I think of student athlete, I think it's a positive term because I think so many people forget that the players they see on television actually have to go to class. So to me, student athlete is kind of a nice reminder that, hey, they're doing all that, and also they're going to class at one of the best universities in the world. So I think of it as a positive. But if you tell me that you talked to Garrison Brooks and he told you, yeah, I've got a problem with that phrase, then okay, if he's got a problem with it, I'm with you. But there's nothing in the article that I read that says anything about anyone had any kind of discussion other than they sat around in the office and tried to come up with a problem they could solve. But I think if Garrison Brooks walks in here tomorrow and we're all wearing our masks and are appropriately distanced and says that term has always bothered me, then I'm on board. It's fine. But they did not illustrate that in the reason why they said they did it. Speaking of big issues, Carolina Kenny sent a mashed.com story on Supermarket Sweep that answers a lot of questions we had.
Oh, I saw that late and I haven't looked at it yet, but I want to.
A lot of questions have now been answered. If you lost, you got to keep your sweatshirt.
Really?
If you won, you did not get to keep your sweatshirt because you got a valuable cash prize.
You can go buy your own.
Right.
Solid red sweatshirt.
But if you lost, you kept a sweatshirt. But Jones, you didn't get to keep the dickie.
So there was the dickie underneath.
Now, see, you say dickie like you've heard of this before, and so did my wife. I've never heard of that in my entire life.
Oh, I've heard that term before, yeah.
As a fake collar?
The shirt under the shirt. Yeah, but it's not like it's not like a full shirt. It's just kind of something that goes like here, like on your... Look, Adam, you see how my hands are motioning? Can't everybody see this? It's just kind of a short little thing, so it looks like you have a shirt under the shirt, but you don't really.
When else in life would you have need for a fake shirt collar other than on Supermarket Sweep in the Big Sweep?
I don't know that answer.
But it's obviously a generally accepted thing because you knew what a dickie was.
I know what it is, yes.
My wife knew what a dickie was. She's like, oh, that's a dickie.
Adam, just Google it real fast on your phone. Hit the images button.
Jones, I just looked up fake dickie and something's not right here. This is not what they were wearing under their sweatshirt, I don't think.
To the best of your knowledge.
David Ruprecht said in that story, the key to winning, the beauty aisle.
Really?
He said, a lot of people don't know. You can get the hair coloring, for example, and it doesn't take up that much room, but it's got a big value.
Yeah, somebody sent us the tweet, and I'm trying.
That was Carolina Kenny. He was asking about the plastic trash cans.
That was him too. That was Kenny too. Yeah, asking about why. And I agree with him. The plastic trash cans take up a lot of space.
Well, and if you get five, you've got to take your cart back right then. Yeah. But why don't you? No one ever puts stuff inside the trash cans.
Yeah. Seems like that would be a efficient use of your space.
You could swing by the beauty aisle and pick up some of David Ruprecht's hot items, put them in the trash can, then you go take your cart. Yeah. I would also like to say, hey, The Ringer, why don't you give a little credit where credit is due, because they wrote a story last week about supermarket sweep.
Late.
You sold 2,000 and late.
Yeah. Well, look, TM, all supermarket sweep discussion. Trademark, TM, throwback.
Our trademarks are universally accepted and followed.
No one ever bites off stuff that we do, and don't you let yourself be that, The Ringer, because I know now you've got that deal with Spotify, and our legal team will be on you like a bunch of barracudas. Now, when we had Jason Kyler on...
now, changing gears...
We discussed TikTok with Jason Kyler.
Yeah, we did. Mm.
If you missed that, you really should go back and listen, because we had on the guy who founded Hulu.
Yeah.
Who's a big Carolina basketball fan and Tar Heel graduate. And he told us TikTok was valuable, and I was skeptical. However, both Carol Simpson and Missy Hampe sent us a Dave Shaw TikTok video about Skittles. Did you watch the video?
Okay, I didn't, but I'm going to tell you why.
Do you want to know what it says?
The email that Carol Simpson sent us said skidded, and then said, did you know, and then had a mysterious video link. Mm-hmm. So I was like, I'm not sure this is something I want to click.
See, I just went ahead and clicked it.
I didn't know what... It's like the mysterious seeds from China. Like, I'm not going to go plant them.
Yeah.
I'm just going to throw them away.
See, I clicked it. And that's why my phone gets hacked by the Russians so often. and random things happen. So Dave Shaw, who I don't know, but he appears to be a very respectable, probably scientist, has discovered this fact, Jones. And you just tell me if you agree with this about Skittles. They are scented and colored differently. But the flavor in all of them is identical.
Wow. So I would assume that could be the case, because I bet the scent, there's got to be something about the scent and the taste. Like, the scent can change the taste to your palate, even if the actual taste is the same. Does that statement make sense?
I know what you're saying, and I suppose that might be right.
Like, if somehow you could take the same Skittle compound, like, let's just, in this theory, let's just say this circle that I'm making with my hand is a Skittle.
It's a big Skittle.
Yeah.
That's one of the European Skittles.
It's one of the European giant Skittles.
Yeah.
And so it's exactly the same. But then if I'm going to make it orange, it's going to have one smell, and if I'm going to make it purple, it's going to have another smell. And so then while I'm eating it, the smell changes what I think the taste is. I could see that being the case.
This means, in theory, that the only thing that changed lime and green apple
is the smell,
is the scent.
Wow, bro. That's crazy.
I know in my heart that purple and red taste different and are better than yellow, for example. It's not just a smell. It's real to me.
We got a tweet from Anna Pinkney Strait, who wanted to know if I was talking about herons and not cranes when I was talking about the birds. The very obvious discussion of me talking about the birds that would be on my mural next to the water fountain to prove how environmentally sound I was. No, I meant cranes. Thank you very much. Adam, a lot of support for our Sally Krawcheck interview.
As there should be.
Yeah. Do you know Sally Krawcheck was named the seventh most powerful woman in the world by Forbes?
I didn't know that. By Scott Forbes?
No, by Matt. The
number one was Mandy.
Yeah.
Number two was Hannah.
2A and 2B were Allie and Hannah. What? Sally Krawcheck? How awesome is Sally Krawcheck? That was a great interview.
And for some reason, she talked to us for a half hour on the pod.
I know.
Like, I'm busy dominating the world, but I'm going to take a half hour to call Jones and Adam.
Yeah, that was good stuff. We appreciate her time.
I would like to watch a game with her. I've said that before.
I bet it's intense.
Yes.
The officials get their ears bent a bit during that.
And possibly some folks on the other bench.
They'll get a little who for what how from her. Hey, quick reminder that we're brought to you by UNC Healthcare. Dedicating. I've said it again.
Yeah, it's a real word.
Trademark.
TM. Hey, The Ringer. Don't let me read your next column about some community
dedicating
who's
to something.
Dedicating to their sport.
Dedicated to caring for champions of all. Just, you know what? They're dedicating champions of all kinds to help keep you in the game and at your very best. UNCHealthcare.org/sports. Adam, what else?
That's all I have. That's all I have to give on this pod.
Okay. So our plan is to be back later in the week. I'm guessing we're going to have some kind of big football news, one way or the other. And we know that we'll have an interview with Scott Forbes and some audio of Mike Fox as well. So you want to make sure you are with us for that. But you were about to say something, Adam.
Oh, I was just thinking that there's a reasonable chance that at least one of us will still be employed by Friday.
50-50 shot.
Yeah, reasonable chance.
For now, we're going to let Rick Steinbacher and the RZA get us out of here on the latest edition of the Carolina Insider.
This is Rick Steinbacher signing off from a guy who was at Carolina in 93 to another guy who had an awesome year in 1993. See you later, big grits. When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat grits for dinner. Pound box of sugar and a stick of margarine. A hot pot of grits kept my family from starving. Steamy hot meal served less than 5 minutes. Big silver pot boiling water salt in it. House full of brothers and sisters, the pot's missing. Pilgrim on a box on the stove in the kitchen. When I was small, we had nothing at all. We used to eat grits for dinner.
See you later, big grit.
The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Tar Heel Sports Network.